Welcome back to the Soapbox. And we have to be honest, we're a little late, but I think I've got one of the best excuses ever for being a little late. Before we get to that, how has your week been, Dad?
Oh, yes, fairly busy. A bit colder this week, still with Australia coming through its winter and a bit of rain and frost. And yeah, also, for those that aren't up with something in Australia, sad thing for me is that the varroa mite, which is a mite that affects honeybees, European honeybees, has spread into Currumbong. So we're losing our beehives there. So that's a bit of a, I love watching the bees. And I've got chooks, so I have birds and I have bees and enjoy spending time with both of them. So those hives are now going to be destroyed, which is a tragedy, but if it controls the mite, then so be it. So, yeah, my work's been a little bit traumatic, but the sun is shining today.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, my week has been interrupted sleep. In the last podcast that we recorded, literally the day after that, we welcomed into the world our baby boy, Luca. And he is now tomorrow going to be 3 years old. So three weeks. I mean, I'm tired. 3 weeks old. I'll edit that out. Tomorrow. Tomorrow he's 3 weeks old. So that's exciting, and he's growing quickly already. And it just meant that we haven't been able to get on and do a podcast yet. But I think our little introduction there is very topical because we're going to talk about the birds and the bees today. But not in the way that you're thinking. The topic is a little bit topical in Australia because there was a book which, for some reason, has become really controversial. And I don't want to label the areas of society that are getting angry about this book, but there's certain elements of our society in Australia. They've got an element about a book about sex that has been sold in any decent bookstore, and it has been written for teenagers. And an article I was reading this morning was saying that the controversy around this book that has happened in our media is basically silly and uncalled for, because young people are learning about sex anyway. And it's not only the school's responsibility to teach young people about sex. It's not only the church's responsibility to teach young people about sex. It's everyone's, and including parents. And this social commentator this morning on, I think it was ABC News, basically was saying that we as a society need to be better at engaging with our young people and talking to them about sex and about things like that, so that they don't have to only go to a book to learn. But anyway, basically a book is called Welcome to Sex by Dr. Melissa Kang and Yumi Steins has become the object of controversy. It's been pulled off the shelves of Big W. I, unbeknownst of the controversy, about 5 weeks ago was at Bookface at Erin Affair, a great bookshop, and grabbed it along with a couple of other books I'm reading to add to my resource library, because it's an area as a pastor that we have to engage with families quite often. And then I discovered it's controversial.
Yeah, it's on your desk. I'm quite jealous because I'm now trying to find a copy, and apparently it's become one of the biggest selling books out right now, because everyone wants to go and get a copy, find out what the fuss is about, which is probably interesting in itself, that it's become a better selling book than what it might have been. And everyone now wants a copy of it. But yeah, you and I have both been looking at this topic in recent months. You told me to go and buy the book, The Big Question Book of Sex and Consent by Donna Freitas. And yes, I've got my copy here as well. And probably the biggest questions I get as a children's pastor and a chaplain last year was around the sex, consent, sexting, cyberbullying, how and when do I talk to my child about these topics? It is topical and it is an issue. And wherever I go, I get asked the same question. So at what age should I talk to my children about these things? And the fact that this book has come onto the market now is causing such controversy. I saw today that Yumni has been She has been death threats, and someone's been charged today from online death threats against her and harassment. So it's become quite serious that it's become such a topical issue right now. And of all things, it's about sex.
Yeah, and I haven't had the time to go dig deep on where exactly this controversy is coming from. An assumption of mine, and assumptions aren't really helpful, but an assumption would be that obviously some Sky News commentator or someone grabbed a hold of it and it's created its own furor, so much so that the reason Big W pulled it off the shelves wasn't because they disagreed with the content, rather it was because people were abusing their workers and threatening their workers over the book. So it's created this hysteria. But I don't want to get bogged down in just speaking about the book, because I think there's some bigger topics that we need to address amongst this. But when I flick through the book, there's really nothing too controversial. There's a few things in there that you might feel uncomfortable with when you read it. But the reality is that young people are learning about this stuff anyway, whether you like it or not. You can't protect them from it. I know that's a big thing to say, but you, as parents, you can't protect them from it. They're going to learn it either from you, or they're going to learn it from porn and media. And it's better to have a very frank, open, well-intentioned, ethical discussion about it rather than letting people learn it from, let's be honest, unethical sources.
Yeah, you're spot on, Andrew. And here's the thing, but the horse has already bolted on this in some ways, and the hysteria over a book on a shelf in Big W or Target or somewhere else, that's just what it is, hysteria, because these same parents, dare I say, have already purchased for their child not just a mobile phone but a smartphone.
Mm.
And if your child has a smartphone, you can guarantee that they've already accessed pornography online, and it's not just what you might call soft porn. It is violent porn. You just need to Google some of the collective shout and look at what Melinda Tank and Riss is talking about to see what that's all about. That's another topic altogether. But either on your child's phone or your friend's phone, the child's friend's phone, they've accessed pornography, and 90% by the age of 11. Now, just the other day, I was presenting it somewhere in Sydney, and a parent said that there is peer group pressure on her daughter in school to have a not just a mobile phone but a smartphone, and her age was 5. So the 5-year-old class, there's peer group pressure for those kids that don't have a smartphone, and the parent said, what do I do? And I said, well, you are the parent. Hold off as long as you can. Flip phones are still available, and if your child has a smartphone or access to a smartphone, you can guarantee that they're all going to be exposed to sex.
And Dr. Adita Yankowicz said in one of her many articles and in some of her other lectures that she's done, you have a choice as a parent. Either you have this conversation with your parent, with your child, or the world will, and everyone else will. And someone asked her in this presentation that she did, so when should I talk to my kids about sex? And she said to them, well, before they go to school, start the conversation. Create a safe way to do it.
Unfortunately, this day and age, you do, because if you don't, then they're going to get them somewhere else. And I would much rather this book be used as a launch pad for a parent to have a conversation with the child about the topics in it, then for them to be discovering in so many more unfortunate ways, and often learning their sex scripts from the violent porn that they will find online.
And yeah, there's a lot of directions we can go here, but I think this Welcome to Sex book is a great launching pad for conversation. That's the intention of it. Is it says it as the byline, your no silly questions guide to pleasure, sexuality, and figuring it out. In other words, somewhere someone needs to be willing to ask and to answer all of the questions that people have about sexuality, because they're not having it answered in other places. Because for some reason, Australian society is afraid to engage with these areas. And that's a really big thing. And this other book that we mentioned, the Big Questions Book of Sex and Consent, whilst also not perfect, what it does is it sets up a framework for having a conversation with young people and creating what is called a sexual ethic in them, in that what you do is, as a parent or as a leader, you want to encourage young people to think seriously about their sexuality and what they do and don't want, rather than allowing them to have the script given to them by porn, by the media, by their peers. Instead, encourage them to engage deeply themselves to do that work.
Yeah, the other big news at the moment that's on our news screens is that last weekend, the Barbie movie actually released onto our cinemas as well. Now, it's already a big-selling movie. And of all things, the Barbie movie, I actually went. My daughter dragged me along last Sunday to it because she's a Barbie. Well, she grew up in a Barbie world in some ways, and she had her Barbies, and within reason. And there might be a whole controversy about whether you buy Barbies for your daughter or not. But the movie, again, as I said online, is a launch pad for conversation around patriarchy, around toxic masculinity, around sex and consent and sexuality. It addresses all of those adult concepts in a Barbie movie. And so you can take your family along and yeah, it's a nice little cute movie sometimes for the kids, but there's a whole lot of other storylines happening, which means that a family conversation can occur around these topics. And research is saying that when the conversation is normalised and is a very normal part of conversation, something like that movie or this book sparks that conversation. It normalises sex. It normalises sexuality. We have a conversation about consent. We have a conversation around what sex is and what it not is. And a conversation with a parent is far more important and beneficial and educational than them finding out from their mates or online. And so I think the book, and by the way, when you look at this rating, it's actually meant to be for teens, for 14 years plus. That's where we should have already had the conversation in some ways. But if this book, controversially or not, sparks conversations in families with daughters, with sons from a very young age, I think it's a winner, and I think it's advantageous, and I think it's very necessary. So I'm glad there's been a whole lot of furor, because I believe it's actually raising the conversation around, well, when do we start talking about it, and how do we start talking about it? And yes, as you said earlier, we need to have these conversations in an age-appropriate manner from a very young age.
Absolutely. And it's an area that the church, I think, has struggled with for a long time. And as Adventists, we've got our own reasons for struggling with that. The reality is that our church came out of a Puritan movement. And yes. Almost a monastic-like denial of human sexuality existed for a very long time within our church. And it has meant that we are ill-equipped to engage in the conversation with our families and with our churches and with our young people. And as we, and you and I, have had our own experiences with this and the way in which conversations around porn happen. Usually they're very combative, and they're very, I don't want to say fueled by rape culture, but many of them are. And yes. It becomes a very patriarchal conversation, and it places the onus on women to avoid any semblance of sexuality or feeling good about themselves so that the boys don't feel aroused. And that's a whole another topic, and it's an area that I've been working on and thinking about for a very long time. But I think what that highlights is, as a church, we haven't actually engaged and worked out what our actual sexual ethic is. And when I say sexual ethic, I want to get very clear on what I mean by that. What I mean is a sexual ethic is the decisions an individual makes informed by their life, religion, their own personal feelings, and their family background. All of those things come into informing the decisions that they are going to make. And the church only has one part in that sexual ethic. And at the moment, we as a church don't really have a very clear one.
I think you're right, Andrew. And I think there's been a whole lot of conversation in that area too. If we make it shame-based or guilt-based or blame-based, then we're in serious hot water. And, yeah, a lot of young girls have been shamed and hurt by some of our attitudes in recent times. And I think we as a church need to find ways to have these conversations within a religious context as well. Unfortunately, so the Puritan movement made sex a part of the flesh, and so it suddenly became sinful, and sex has been put into this simple idea rather than the whole idea around the fact that God invented sex and that sex is good and sex is wholesome and sex is a good part of life in the right context. And again, we only ever discuss it, as you said, from a shame-based idea, and that is very unhelpful. And I think it's boring into what the evangelicals went into, which is what we call the purity movement, where you had fathers giving their daughters purity rings and having special ceremonies where they were given the purity ring. The research has since shown that was actually had the opposite effect and created more guilt and more shame rather than stopping their daughters from having sex. And, yeah, so unfortunately we need to, I think, go back and look at what the Bible actually says about sex and reality and the fact that God said it was very good right from the very beginning, and I think build up a positive ethic of how sex and that God invented sex and he saw it was very good as part of life.
Yeah, and the Jewish tradition actually has a pretty good understanding of this, surprisingly. The rabbis have all sat down over a long time, and they're not perfect, but at the bar mitzvah, or I forgot what the female version of that is, when you go from a child to a man in their tradition, you know what they were all given? Always? They were given access to Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon, which, when you read it, yes, there's goat and there's pearls and all that sort of stuff. But what it actually is it's a letter about the beauty of sexuality and what it was created for. And the Jewish tradition kind of understands that and leans into that. And that's not perfect. But I guess what I'm saying is that if we're going to get on our hobby horse and say that a book like Welcome to Sex is bad, we need to actually be able to say, well, it's bad, but we have this. We have a better or a more wholesome way of doing it. Because at the moment, we actually have nothing. We're just angry. I've seen actually a fair few Adventists angry about this book as well. I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, you can be angry about it, but what do we have to offer this area? Because currently, we don't have anything.
And often when they say that Song of Songs is trying to moralise the way, it's an allegory about the church and God's
attitude. No.
No. It's a sex book.
it's well, you can make that allegory, but you're making some really big exegetical leaps and you're reading into it. But what it actually is it quite literally is a love letter between two lovers. And that's beautiful. And we need to be willing to say, hey, this is really cool. And this is a way that you can engage with each other positively.
Yeah, but even stories like Queen Esther, Ruth and David, some of those stories, which actually have a lot of sexual innuendo in them, we often want to skip over that and make it into a nice little children's story, and we leave it as a children's story rather than realize that the implications in it are quite significant. And if we were to read into and normalise what's in those stories as well, it would, again, provide quite a positive understanding of what that sex is a part of life. And necessary and wholesome and good part of life. And that's where I think that if we have a natural conversation with our children from a very young age, it's just a natural thing to talk about. It doesn't mystify it. It doesn't make it something that's taboo, doesn't make it embarrassing. It's just something normal. Now, Madison, we love your sister, my daughter Madison. She asked these questions again from a very young age, and she said just the other day that Dad, it was just normal because you allowed me to watch some of those shows like Pat to the Rafters and other things alongside you, and those sorts of questions came up, and then we had those sorts of discussions in the car, and mainly with your mother on the way to school. And but yeah, it's a very normal thing for her because it was just part of life.
Yeah. Peter Enns, he is a part of a group called The Bible for Normal People, and he's got a book that speaks about scripture and scriptural authority. But in it, he has an illustration about parenting and how he sat down with his 9-year-old sons and watched Saving Private Ryan. Well, you and I sat down when I was 9, 10, 11, watched Band of Brothers in the Pacific, which arguably is worse. But
pretty boring.
Yep. But what I'm using that to say is that what this guy did is he shared innocently with some of his other Christian friends, hey, my son and I, we watched Saving Private Ryan this weekend. And he got a lecture on how much of a horrible parent he was for exposing his son to war and to all that sort of stuff. But his view of it, and I think I use Proverbs 25 or something to say that you need to protect protect kids from all that sort of stuff. But what his actually view was is, no, he's being a really good parent because he's not allowing his son to be exposed to these things alone. His son wanted to watch Saving Private Ryan. His son probably would have watched it without him anyway. A really great way to watch it and to normalize and to talk about war is to do it together. To process together all of those things so that it becomes a healthier understanding, not a desensitized understanding of what's going on, and became a positive experience. And I think we actually need to do more of that when it comes to engaging with sex and sexuality and the birds and the bees, for lack of a better thing, because growing up with plenty of chooks around and ducks and geese and sheep, goats and guinea pigs and pigeons and rabbits, so on and so forth, you're going to be exposed to the realities of nature. And whilst that's a very mechanical and basic way, with a devoid of the pleasure, you are exposed to that sort of stuff. And then when it comes to that pleasure bit, it's a much healthier way to engage with it.
Yeah, and you hit on the problem right there, Andrew, in that many of our kids these days don't grow up with that. It's actually a privilege to have that these days. And amazing, in a school here in the city that I was involved in last year, they didn't even know where the eggs came from. The chook eggs actually came out of the backside of chooks, and they were quite shocked to know where eggs came from. And this is where we're losing touch. When you lose touch with nature, you lose touch with some of the stories in nature which are applicable into our context as humans, and yeah, again, it provides a natural learning and a way of application and a way of applying that to relationships as well. So yeah, I think that that's one of the things we need to be aware of, is that kids are losing touch with nature and learning from the chooks and from the cow and from the horse and from the whatever else is in the yard.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly, and seeing those things provides a natural conversation point. Without going into too much detail, you learn what a duck's penis looks like and that sort of stuff, and it's not, it's like, oh, that's just interesting. Like, it's not something that is to be hidden. It's something that's a part of nature. And I've been in conversation with some of my other young adult friends that have been married, and for many of them, they actually struggled making the switch from sex is bad and something that I need to be afraid of and avoid, to all of a sudden having to have a healthy sexuality in a marriage because it's an important part of a marriage. And when I hear those stories, I realize that the church has done a disservice to those marriages, and they've done a disservice to those young adults, because they have then had to struggle and learn, and actually not learn any, have had to unlearn and deconstruct what they've been taught and build up something that's better. And it's a big shame that those people have, that those young adults have had to do that. And I wish that, and I hope for future young people, that they won't have to unlearn. They'll be able to enter into something that is beautiful and isn't full of fear and worry and stress.
Yeah, you're right. I agree with you completely. And I think, as I said earlier, if this starts a conversation around sex and all those topics that it covers, and it's quite a, if you haven't seen the books, there's quite a list of topics it covers, and some are more explicit than others, but they're things that need to be discussed and talked about. As I said earlier in this podcast, if they're not actually having a discussion with you about it, their natural curiosity will take them online and other places where they will, find more unwholesome things.
Yeah, and someone listening to this is going to probably be going, okay, so what now? I'd actually probably encourage you to go out if you're worried about the book, buy the book and have a flick through it. And if you're still freaking out, then maybe there might be some substance to it. And go and actually read some resources about this. Not just the two books we've mentioned today. There's a book out of the evangelical community that goes through the damage that has happened in those communities from purity culture called Pure by Linda K. Klein. There's The Great Big Sex Rescue by, I forgot her name now, it's going to come back to me. But look up The Big Sex Rescue, again, evangelical Southern Baptist context. And another
we'll
book...
We'll tag it at the top.
Yep. Tag them at the top. Another book that also might be helpful is, it's going to come to me now, it was The Making of Biblical Womanhood. Whilst it's more in the context of ministry, it unpacks a lot of the overarching narratives that people have been given in the Southern Baptist / evangelical church around women and men and roles, and that plays over into sex and power. And another one is to go and have a look at The Bible for Normal People. You haven't vetted this one, Dad, but Peter Enns, and I forgot the other person who works there with him on it. Whilst it might seem scary and pushing too far, they do dig into biblically topics like this. They've just recently had a seminar called The Bible Is Not a Sex Book, was an interesting seminar. I don't agree with everything there, but just to help people engage with this topic and start to unpack it and not just become alarmist and get caught up in the, I'm going to say it, cancel culture hype, but rather to engage honestly with this topic and help us to create a better way forwards that's going to enable us to converse with our kids, our teenagers, and our young people without just saying porn is bad, stay away from it, and men are easily aroused, when I think we've got a far more beautiful picture we can paint around masculinity, around men taking responsibility, around femininity, around embracing that, and around enabling us to be seen as equals sexually in the kingdom of God.
Which is when you read Genesis right through, that's exactly what it's saying. I think that we need to realise also that trying to protect your kids from all this is not going to work in today's society. The better way is to be an involved parent, having regular conversations early and often in an age-appropriate manner so that this topic comes up naturally. And all the stats say that when parents have involved and regular conversations with their children on these topics, any damage from these topics or any of the unwholesome stuff they see, the effects of that and the damage of that drops significantly just by having an informed, regular, normal conversation. So I guess some of the things out of conclusion is to have those conversations. Be aware that if your child has a mobile phone, then they already are exposed and set some boundaries around when mobile phones can be used, keep them out of bedrooms, have a mainframe that's voluntarily set up in your lounge room where you see what they're talking about, and you're able to engage in those regular conversations with your children.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of a great summation. Check out the resources in the link, all those different books. There's a lot there. Some of them are controversial. There's been a lot of pushback against each of them. If you want to access another one, you can go to disciple.org.au to resources, and I believe it's underneath Children's and Family Ministries, and there's a link to some resources there, which has a whole heap of books, particularly ones that you've written on children and porn and technology as well. And I think you're revamping those as well, and you might even better include some of this newer stuff that we've really been unpacking recently in those. So look out for those.
They've kind of been updated. Also, early advertising, while we've got time for there's a new app coming out soon, which will have this podcast on amongst other resources. And it's a Faith Builders app for parents, which is going to have lots of resources around these topics, plus worship ideas and bedtime ideas and parenting ideas. So that's coming out probably by September. This day will be launched probably mid-September. So I've seen some sneak previews of it, and it's come along really well. So a lot of these topics you will find on that podcast as well, which you'll start seeing across your app stores on both Google Play and Apple by September.
Awesome. Well, I think with that, we've kind of very briefly covered a massive subject that is very topical at the moment. If you want to read some news articles on it, just search it. There's plenty of news articles out there at the moment going through these from all the different perspectives. If you want to find a perspective that helps you to see, understand, and work out a bit more. And we look forward to our next time on The Soapbox. And with that, I'm over and out.